Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz _ radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and TJ Henning.
What is up? TJ Henning here in the ESPN 1480 studios. Chris Schmidt is out today. He is up in Minnesota land trying to see some Aaron Judge home runs for him and Junior and the family. A little baseball trip up to Minnesota. They're going to be up there today and tomorrow. They left yesterday. A little Yankees Twins so Junior can get his baseball fix because, you know, Junior's a bandwagon fan. You know, Bama, Oregon, Seahawks. Now the Yankees. So glad to have you in here. TJ Henning, Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Got a fun show packed for you today. Going to talk a little recruiting here shortly. Got Mitch Sherman, Big 12 Media Days. He is down there. He will be chatting with us. Then we'll have Jacob Bedia in the second hour. Getting all your thoughts on Nebraska basketball off season. Maybe a little Creighton off season, unfortunately for some people listening out there. A little summer league and then also some in-state recruits. Do a little NFL talk in the second hour, and then Aaron Sorensen put out an article today, Land of 10, best worst-case scenario for the Nebraska Cornhusker football team. We're going to get into that too well, but joining me today, already coming back, it is the man, Greg Smith.
What's happening?
What is going on, dude? You are back.
Just when I thought I was out, it's good to be back. It was a little weird walking back in here, even though it's only been like a week and a day or something
right?
like that. Not that anyone's counting. But, you know, I'm happy to be here. We'll see if I can still do this thing effectively.
Jay-Z is ready. He's happy to have you back, too. And
appreciate it.
Speaking of Jay-Z, I haven't even talked about this yet, and I want to get out there. So Jay-Z is coming back to the Pinnacle Bank Arena December 6th.
Yep.
I am utterly shocked he is coming back. Because did you go to the first one?
I did not.
Was there?
No.
There was a 40-minute power outage at the first concert Jay-Z did here. Like, that type of thing does not happen to Jay-Z. Like, he did 5 Lux songs because of that happening. So I even felt a little cheated. But a 40-minute power outage, this wasn't 5 or 10. I mean, this was 40. Now, the production value was exquisite, so I can understand like something like that happened, but a guy of his stature, a 40-minute power outage, that does not happen. So all of a sudden, he was excitedly wants to come back. I just find that a little strange.
I do find it a little odd. I'm happy for people of Lincoln that enjoyed it with Jay-Z. I, you know, will not be there, but
You won't be there?
No,
I don't like Jay-Z.
No, I'm not a huge Jay-Z guy.
Oh
no,
well, he's better than Kendrick Lamar.
Maybe he is. We'll see. That's debatable.
It has to be
444. Is that the new album that he's out?
Yeah, that's just okay.
It is shocking that a guy of that level had those types of issues, 40-minute power outage, and is coming back relatively soon. Since when he was last here for that. Has there been any other time that that's happened to someone at PBA? Like, I can't remember, and maybe it's happened, and, you know, it was a show we weren't, neither of us were at or something like that, but it doesn't feel like I can remember another situation like that. Now, so does that help, though? Does it help to go to Jay-Z and his people and be like, hey, this is just a one-time malfunction, so please come back?
I mean, it better be, because I'm not going to Metallica or all these country concerts.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if they are happening, I'm not there. And
there's been an uptick in hip-hop acts here.
There
recently,
have been.
Right?
Yeah, and I'm Bruno Mars. I hope I can go to that one. I mean,
can't wait for that. I got those on the pre-sale.
Well done.
That was very quick on that.
People are smarter, though, because now the prices are so high, they just bought them early and now are reselling them to, like, chumps like me who are eventually probably going to buy them, and it's like, man.
What kind of cash are we talking here?
Yeah,
I might have to.
I'm going to try to refrain, but if I can find a good deal, I'm going to have to go there.
Okay.
But, yeah, you got Logic coming to the Pinewood Bowl Theater, obviously Kendrick Lamar, The Weeknd in September. So
I got
to
get tickets for that.
Yeah, just a lot of great I mean, who knew? Like, I think a lot of people are skeptical that you could get the big artists coming to Lincoln, but I mean, shoot, Katy Perry, Justin Bieber, like, obviously people may not like them, but they are big names.
Yeah, they're huge names, and as an added bonus for those, you know, for that Lincoln-Omaha rivalry, I saw a lot of people in Omaha complaining that Lincoln is getting all of these big acts, so that's good. That's what people in Lincoln wanted when PBA went in. This was the hope that they would end up getting big concerts.
For sure. Well, off that side tangent, Greg, your team got a chip last night.
The Lakers are back.
The what did Magic Johnson just say?
The Lakers are back.
Magic on the sauce.
Lakers are back.
Did he say that after the champagne celebration?
No, I mean, that was like 5 minutes after the game was over. Oh, so if you didn't know this, the Summer League is finally over. I know some people are excited about
that. What do you mean, did not know? Everybody knows the Summer League, right?
I don't know. There's a lot of hate about Summer League on the old Twitter sphere sometimes.
I don't know.
I mean, what else
why?
Is going on?
Right. That was my argument for that. Is that you did, there was a lot of anger. Man, ESPN is shoving the Summer League down my throat. What else do you want to talk? Like, what do you want people to talk about?
Yeah. Like, honestly, we're coming up on the worst time of the year where the Little League World Series takes over ESPN, and I just want to not watch it ever. So what else are you going to watch? Anywho, the Lakers, they won the league, the Summer League Championship last night. Doesn't mean a whole lot, but honestly, it's a developmental time for the first and second round picks from this year's draft. Guys who are trying to make rosters, and guys even from like last year, like Brandon Ingram was on the Summer League team, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was for like a game until he had like a little injury scare, and he played well, so they said, let's just shut this thing down.
But the league MVP, Lonzo Ball of the Summer League, and he missed two games, but yet he had two triple-doubles, Greg.
How you like that? Spoke it into existence.
But yeah, people were crushing him after that first game.
From the mouth of Zeus, as LeVar said, to all of our ears, Lonzo, the man. Listen.
All these full court passes, man. Oh, awesome.
He's a fun guy to watch. Like, I think that what you saw in this Summer League action is basically the pinnacle. Now, there's some things, of course, if we want to really nitpick, I'm not going to. But if you really want to and talk about things that he can improve, of course, there are things there for him. Obviously, just his first go-round in some sort of professional ball before he actually gets to play real professionals every night. And the point guard position is the deepest position in the NBA. So that's not going to be easy when he gets there.
Yeah.
But we did get to see in Summer League kind of the pinnacle in the ideal situation of what you want to see from him, right? You want to see him leading the league in assists. That's what he did during Summer League. You want to see him leading all guards and rebounding, what he did in Summer League, because he was always a great passer in college, led the NCAA in assists while he was there, was a good rebounder at UCLA as well. I thought that those parts of his game would translate, and I still believe that. Nothing has changed that. Shot selection, though, needs to improve because, man, he jacks up some bad shots.
And I hear people want to mess with his form, which I understand, but sometimes at some point you just got to let that go. Like, the guy makes shots.
Yeah.
It may not look pretty, but they go in.
Yeah, and he's, at this point in his career, very early on, he is just, he's a streaky shooter. Like, he's just super streaky. Like, that is the issue with him right now. If you can level some of that out, you're going to have yourself a heck of a player. Because, like I said, I don't think the rebounding and the passing is going away. And I think, honestly, the scary, I guess, thing for other teams thing is that what happens when he's playing, like, there's a lot of talk about, hey, those windows will get smaller once he's playing against good NBA players. Well, what happens when he's passing to good NBA players, because guys that can actually hit those shots. There were a lot of times where he made great plays and great passes and guys were missing shots because these are dudes that might be working at UPS next week. Like, you know that that's probably going to be in the equation right there.
Well, maybe it's Enterprise, because I think they hire the most former college
athletes.
Okay,
see, there you go. So maybe Enterprise. I'm sorry, Enterprise. Shout out to you guys. But you know what I mean? Like, there's going to be guys, like, actually, like, what happens when he drives and then he's passing to Brandon Ingram or Julius Randle or Jordan Clarkson or KCP that they just signed, like, that's going to help him a lot going forward.
And going back to his shooting form, you can tell that. I think this is going to be happening longer the basketball goes on because of guys like Steph Curry. Kids are fascinated by shooting the three-point shot. I worked in elementary school. All these kids are just yelling Curry when they shoot from deep.
Oh, yeah. No, so like Kobe?
No.
Curry,
well, they do a little Kobe, okay. But yeah, mostly Curry. And it's just, you can tell he's generating it from his hips and just bringing it straight up and like having to use a lot of force, a lot of energy. So he obviously did that when he was young. I just think you're going to keep seeing that because both the balls, before they kind of became known, they had this article written about him on the Ringer, Bill Simmons' website, where it's like, yeah, these kids are the next Steph Currys because they're shooting from deep and making them. Like, and you saw LaMelo, what, 92 points.
Yeah.
Like, he was pulling up for half court on some of those, which, for better or worse, is what it is.
And I've seen some people, some folks that really do a nice job of breaking down film and looking at development of players say that they can tell based on Lonzo's shot that LaVar always had them shooting on regulation hoops. That's part of why his shot is like that, because he never got that development of kind of building up to a regulation size hoop that he always was shooting on that. But I found kind of a fascinating nugget that people can be able to tell something like that based on somebody's shot.
So we have Magic's proclamation.
The Lakers are back.
I mean, here we go again.
The Lakers are back.
But we got to be careful because this kind of thing has happened, right? Where people declare somebody's back.
Texas is back, folks.
Say it again, Joe Tess.
Texas is back, folks.
And I love Joe Tess. Joe Tess is like one of my favorite players. Like, he had the thing, the aura, where it was like every game he did was just like coming down to the finish line. Yeah. So it's absolutely great.
That Gus Johnson effect.
Yeah, for sure. But now, this clip is just going to live in infamy.
Texas is back, folks.
That was rough, man. That's rough.
The Lakers are
back.
The Lakers are
back, folks.
Do that to Magic.
Oh, man. I just had to have a little fun with that, right?
Yeah, I guess you got to have a little fun with Magic. So what you're saying is the Lakers are not back?
Not yet.
Okay. So when LeBron joins.
They're back from the summer. That's for sure. Oh, God. LeBron, no. Why is LeBron going west? We might have to save that for later.
Does it matter where he goes? He's LeBron. These guys are running from him.
Why are you going to go to the west where you have Golden State, where you have the Spurs, where you have CP3 just join the Rockets, even though I don't know about that combo yet.
How that's going to work.
Come on, no. Who's in the East that scares you? Maybe Boston now? If D-Wade goes back to Miami, which there's rumblings about, Wade is trying to recruit him.
That was great.
No. We'll get back to this later.
Okay, we'll drop that for now. We'll pick it back up.
Because I wanted to give you a little time to talk here. You put out an article earlier today on HailVarsity.com. That's now who Greg Smith works for. He's in charge of recruiting for HailVarsity.com. Doing a great job. Had all the insights this week on Elijah Blades and Deontay Watts. I mean, Greg, you found that huge bomb with Deontay Watts just kind of not feeling football anymore, right?
Yeah, it was, and it's still shocking. I've talked about this a little bit, and it's still surprising. And talking to a source about that one is that it came up right away that, hey, it's not just that he didn't qualify, and that he could be going to Fort Scott Community College in Kansas. It's really looking like he's done with football right now, which I just kind of double take on the phone, like, wait, what? Is that what you said? Did you say that he actually is thinking about hanging him up? And I still kind of chalk this up to a young guy making a rash decision in that, hey, man, if it wasn't going to be my D1 dream at a big school like Nebraska, then it's not going to be anything. I'm just done. Like, that's still kind of my sense on that situation. I do know that the adults in the situation are trying to talk him out of that. And so far, they've been unsuccessful. A source told me that Deontay Watts has kind of closed down who he's talking to on that, and still is leaning towards not playing football anymore and retiring. Like, it's stunning, man, to hear something like that about a kid that, you know, one minute is going to a Big Ten school in Nebraska, and then the next minute he wants to just quit football altogether.
Yeah, and that just makes me wonder how much he actually loved football to begin with.
You know, and Jay Foreman, you know, former black shirt, talks about this all the time. You have got to love football. If you do not love it, it's not going to happen for you, because you have got to be a 24/7 on football, essentially. And if he's not going to do that, it is best that he goes ahead and steps away now versus going to a college and kind of giving it a half effort and then end up washing out that way.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're 6'3", 300, people are telling you, oh, you must be a football player, or you must be a basketball player. Like, you know, if you're some height, you're going to just put you out there. But they may do it, but they not necessarily love it. How about Elijah Blades, an update on him?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. This Elijah Blades story, if you can believe one, is weirder than the Watts story. Like, it had to have taken some real turns, but I think this Blade story is actually more strange than the Watts story.
That's what it sounded like.
Where, you know, I was, and then we put this story out yesterday on HailVarsity.com at like 12:30, that I was told that he would not be coming to Nebraska for sure, that he would be going to Arizona Western Community College out in Yuma to play, continue playing football and go to JUCO out there. What I was not told, and what came out later last night, I think it was Rivals that talked to him about this, talked to Elijah, and then Elijah put the statement out via Twitter as well, was that Nebraska gave him the opportunity to be a partial qualifier, and he decided to turn that down and go to JUCO. Now, when you first hear that, you think, and I see your face that you're making, you're like, that seems a little strange.
Did he watch Last Chance U?
Right. And that's the thing that worries me, too, is that ultimately is that I think that he's in for a real tough road, because the technical situation here of not qualifying for Division I athletics means that when he goes to JUCO, this is not a semester situation. He has to go there and graduate with his associate's degree. So if you remember in Last Chance U, for example, and that's a great example because so many people watch that. If you didn't, go check it out on Netflix. It's really good.
And season two is
when does that come out?
Like July. It might be this weekend, actually.
Okay, yeah, I thought it might be sneaking up. So, yeah, so check that out. Binge watch it so you get ready for season two, because it was really good. But if you watch that, you know that those guys had a lot of struggles, and that is a very clear picture of junior college and what can happen to guys thinking that, hey, they can just go there, not really go to class, they're only focused on football, and then the big-time schools are going to come calling. If you watch the show, you know that that does not always work out. You got guys who are kind of coming in and out of school, missing games, missing classes, not really buckled down and focused. Like it's going to be a long road for Elijah Blades to come back to a Division I university. And one last note on this before we hit break is that, because I know you're going to ask, I do not see him in the picture for Nebraska going forward. I don't think that this is a situation where Nebraska gets back into this. Should he complete his JUCO in 2 years and reopen things up, I don't think he is in the picture for Nebraska, which might be for the best. It seemed like he was a little upset about the whole situation, thought it would be easier to get into Nebraska, and that's what he was sold on. Didn't happen. I don't think he's going to be mentioned with Nebraska or linked to them anytime soon.
Okay, and the rest of your article, we'll get to that later, because you know we now have two scholarships. So we'll have to look and see if Nebraska plans to do anything with them. Also, we'll have free 6-month subscription to HailVarsity.com to give away. We have Lincoln Salt Dogs VIP tickets for Saturday's game to give away. Up next, though, Mitch Sherman of ESPN.com. He's down at Big 12 Media Days. We'll chat with him next.
The Lakers are back, folks!
And now.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back into Hail Varsity Radio. TJ Henning here, filling in for Chris Schmidt today up in Minnesota, checking out some Twins Yankees games with his family. Greg Smith of HailVarsity.com is in with me today. We now head down to Big 12 Media Days, where ESPN.com's Mitch Sherman is. Mitch, how are we doing?
I'm doing well, TJ and Greg. How are you guys?
We're doing all right, and I think the most pressing question down there in Big 12 Media Days, for me at least, is how is Mike Gundy's mullet looking?
Yeah, I'm just working on the story right now about Mike Gundy's mullet. He trimmed it recently after his kids told him it needed to be done. See, Coach Gundy thought that he needed to trim his mullet this summer, and his family was somewhat in disagreement. So he put it back into a ponytail and then walked outside the house wearing only a swimsuit. So this caused his wife, Kristen, to finally chime in after a year of mullet wearing, where she did not make any comment about the hair. She finally chimed in, and their kids agreed that it was time to give it a trim. So I thought the mullet still looks good today. You know, it wasn't like mid-season, late-season form from last year, but it still it looks good, had some nice curl to it. And I will say that Mike Gundy enjoys talking about his mullet. And he spent about, maybe half of the 2 hours he was doing interviews today, actually addressing his hair.
Wow, and that was a lot of hard-hitting analysis, more than I expected. So well done, Mitch.
I can go on. So
I enjoyed that.
Just direct it the way you want.
I want to go to more of a serious issue, serious school, and that's Baylor with all the problems they've had and their new head coach Matt Rhule. And you had an article out on him today. Kind of looks like they're using the pass or not. Running away from it. They're going to use that pass to learn from it. Is he ready for this? Because, I mean, this is his first Power 5 job, and this is not an easy school to start there.
No, it's not. He was a little bit nervous going up on stage today, and this is his first Big 12 Media Days, and this is done a little bit differently than the way things were at Temple, no doubt about that. But it was quite a contrast to Lincoln Riley yesterday, who was all smiles and extremely easygoing. Different situation for Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma than you have for Matt Rhule at Baylor, and of course Tom Herman at Texas is the other new coach in the Big 12. But Rhule had a prepared statement, and he basically read from the statement for the first 3 to 4 minutes of his press conference, which is fine. You know, he said what he wanted to say. I think it would have been difficult to remember all of that and get all of those important points out if he had just gone up and winged it. And he got better as the or at least more relaxed as the press conference went on. You're right, TJ. In your question, they want to be forward thinking, be progressive about educating people and preventing sexual assault. I think the thing that people who heard it probably walked away believing is that, you know, Baylor has to make sure that its own house is clean and that it gets past the investigations that are ongoing, both at the state level, internally, and with the NCAA, before it gets too far down the road in becoming a leader nationally in this area. It's great for Baylor that it wants to take that route, and you know, I think it's important to start to put those steps into place. But there's still work to be done on that campus to ensure that they are ready to move forward before they can go about becoming a national leader on that. It clearly, from a year ago, they've made tremendous strides. A year ago at this time, Jim Grobe had been instituted as the interim coach. He still had Art Briles' assistance in place, and there was so much confusion. I think there was anger on the parts of people inside and outside of the program. There were people that felt that Baylor was being treated unfairly. I think there was still some denial about all that had happened. And you saw over the upcoming months and even after the season how story after story, accusation after accusation, allegation after allegation continued to come out that were just devastating for that football program and that university. So they have, I think, started to arrive at a place where they can move forward because they've completely cleaned house on that staff. There are no more assistants left over from Art Briles. Matt Rhule has his guys in place, and you know, today was fine for Baylor. It wasn't another black eye, which is at least a movement in the right direction.
Hey, Mitch, going to another first-time head coach in the conference who you briefly mentioned there, Tom Herman, made some noise today when he said that Texas needed to be playing Texas A&M. A, what did you make of that? And B, is there any real chance that we end up getting this rivalry started back up?
I don't think it happens, and I didn't hear the comments. He didn't make those comments up front. You know, there's a lot of different interviews that go on here. He probably said that during the 90 minutes that just ended at 4 o'clock. I don't think it'll happen because I think there's too many factions at war between those two universities that it's going to be very difficult to repair. You know, from the time that Texas A&M jumped to the SEC right up until this day, I don't think I haven't seen any signs that you're going to get the right people on the same page. It's got to be both universities. It's got to be more than just the coach. It's got to be administration to make that thing happen. I'll need to learn more about what Tom Herman said before I can make a great judgment on it. But I don't expect it to happen anytime soon.
So, Mitch, with Bob Stoops retiring and then putting in Lincoln Riley as the head coach, I thought this might be the chance for the Riders to choose maybe somebody different to win the Big 12. Again, they choose Oklahoma. I thought maybe this would be the chance for Mike Gundy and those guys. Were you surprised? It was I'm not sure if it was unanimous or not, but most people still voted for Oklahoma.
I'll tell you, it wasn't unanimous because I voted for Oklahoma State.
Okay, that's what I thought.
And you know, I talked to several others who voted for Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma State had 12 first-place votes, and the Sooners were up around 20. So There's a division. There's a division, like as in a disagreement. There is. It's not a consensus on the parts of the media, or I would suggest the coaches to whomever was tasked to pick the league champion in the preseason, which means nothing on who it's going to be. Yeah, I mean, Oklahoma State's got talent busting at the seams offensively, and the question for Oklahoma State is. Are they going to have a strong enough defense? And the defense isn't bad in Stillwater. Some questions at the linebacker spot, but there are some questions in the secondary. But they have solid players back at both of those levels, and their defensive line should be one of the better groups in the Big 12. So I don't think it's a complete liability. This isn't Texas Tech's defense we're looking at here. And if Oklahoma State is serviceable and can get that ball back to its offense without giving up 50 points a game, they're going to outscore everybody. So at least in the conference, including, I would suggest, Oklahoma. And that's with Baker Mayfield at quarterback as a two-time top five Heisman finisher. So I'm not as bullish on Oklahoma. I don't think they have the kind of complete team that Oklahoma State does. Now we'll see. They've recruited well, and they're going to bring guys along in that program and develop players who are going to quickly become efficient at their positions. But right now, going into the season, to me, Oklahoma State looks like a better team.
Now, you mentioned the quarterbacks there in your answer, so to go to them next. You're the quarterback down in the Big 12, a lot of good players returning. So two-parter for you again here. Who's the best quarterback in the conference? Seems like people are a little bit split between Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph. And then who's the quarterback that you think is getting overlooked a little bit?
Well, I think Baker Mayfield's the best quarterback in the league. I mean, Mason Rudolph is a great player, but the weapons that he has around him are and Baker has had that in the past. You know, Baker had Sterling Shepard 2 years ago. You know, last year he had the Biletnikoff Award winner at receiver. So, but I would say that what Mason Rudolph has at Oklahoma State with James Washington and Jalen McCleskey. They have Marcel Aitman back this year. They have Tyron Johnson, the LSU transfer. They've got Justice Hill in the backfield, who was the Big 12 offensive freshman of the year last season. They're loaded, and they have four starters back on the offensive line. So he may put up better numbers than Baker Mayfield, but I think Baker Mayfield is the guy who has more intangibles, who has more playmaking ability, and it has more of an it factor than not just any player in the Big 12, but as much as any player in the country, and that's with Lamar Jackson, the Heisman Trophy winner at Louisville, coming back.
So, Mitch, after this segment, we're going to play some audio from Cliff Kingsbury down there, some questions asked to him. But I just kind of want to get your sense. Does he seem concerned at all about his situation? I know that's his alma mater, and maybe it seems like he might have a longer leash there. But does he seem concerned at all?
I'm sure he's concerned about the way they played last year. Yeah. You know, he's not going to come out at media days and talk about his feelings about his job security. He's not going to talk about whether it's a make or break year. But, yeah, I think if you got inside of his head, he'd be concerned. You know, you see Texas Tech slide last season, lose by 50 points on the road to Iowa State in November, and then you take Patrick Mahomes off that roster. I mean, what I said about Baker Mayfield being the most dynamic guy in the league or the guy with the most intangibles, Patrick Mahomes was the most talented player, just pound for pound, and regardless of position last year in the Big 12. And he's plays for the Kansas City Chiefs now. So you take him off, that does not make Texas Tech a better team. And unless it can find a way to play defense, you know, I think Texas Tech finished ninth in the league behind Iowa State. So if that happens, yeah, there's concern about Cliff Kingsbury. It would be very interesting to see what Kirby Hokut, the athletic director at Texas Tech, what kind of a move he would make if it just looks like that thing's not going to be able to be fixed without a drastic move. So I don't know that it'll get to that point. Maybe it will. Maybe it'll happen this year. Maybe Cliff can get things turned around and they can start playing some better defense. They're going to find somebody to throw the ball, even without Patrick Mahomes. Nick Szymanek is going to put up a lot of yards at the quarterback spot. But yeah, there's concerns in Lubbock for sure.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. Go check out his articles on Big 12 Media Days at ESPN.com. Mitch, thanks so much for giving us your time on your busy day.
Sure, guys. Thanks.
Mitch Sherman, ESPN.com. Some good stuff there. Wow. Texas Tech ninth,
man. I don't know if he survives that one.
I don't think he would either, and I'm a Cliff guy.
Like, yeah, I like him. I just wish that if he could consistently win eight games, and then, you know, every few years.
Maybe not give up 40 of them.
Yeah, and then not do that. I did like, though, the one thing I loved about what he did, I think it was yesterday, when he was asked about not being able to find defensive players in the state of Texas. He did not blow up about that. He just kind of calmly answered it. I did like that.
Yeah.
It went with the whole cool Cliff Kingsbury mantra.
So, yes, that will be some of the audio you will hear next. If you want the most hard-hitting journalism questions that you can find, you're going to want to stick around for the next segment.
Oh, I can't wait for these.
I hope you sense the sarcasm in my voice. but it's some great audio that you're going to want to hear. We still have Salt Dogs VIP tickets to give away for Saturday's game. Some 6 months online subscriptions to give away at HailVarsity.com. Get all those premium posts that Greg is posting about. All these recruiting updates. You're going to want to be a part of that. Jacob Dilla starts off second hour. We'll get to him later. You're listening to Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Hey,
back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Welcome back into Hail Varsity Radio. TJ Henning, Greg Smith with you today. Pay some bills here, shall we? 7 out of 10 is too many. That is the portion of unbuckled vehicle occupants that were killed on Nebraska roads last year. If they had all been using seatbelts at a minimum, at least 69 of them would be alive today. In order to save more lives, over 60 law enforcement agencies across the state will be on the lookout for seatbelt violations this month. As part of the National Clicker Ticket Campaign, over 6,000 hours of additional Nebraska traffic enforcement operations will be writing tickets for seatbelt and child or saint violations. So click it or ticket. This message from the Nebraska Department of Roads and Highway Safety Office. So we were just talking Big 12 Media Days with Mitch Sherman. He was down there. Thankful for him to give us time today. I know he's a busy guy writing a bunch of articles for old ESPN.com since they fired most of their writing staff. So,
oh, shots fired.
glad Mitch has still got a job there and doing a great job.
Yeah,
love talking
awesome.
To Mitch.
Yeah.
But I mentioned we were going to get into some Cliff Kingsbury audio. I don't know if it was just if they're picking on Cliff this Big 12 Media Days. People know he's on the hot seat. They want to, you know, rile him up a little bit. But here's the first clip, and it's an interesting walk-up song.
Kingsbury, coach is going to go straight to questions. Hey guys, we're now joined by Coach Cliff Kingsbury from Texas Tech. We're going to go straight to questions. Coach is going to skip his opening statement. So if you have a question.
Actually, I have one opening statement. I'm not sure why we had the Justin Bieber plan for my walk-up song, but
that was your question, though. That didn't work the same way.
They did him wrong.
Who chose that? Who did that? Like, did he? Like, I mean, he genuinely sounded like he didn't do that.
No.
So, man.
I mean, you're not choosing Justin Bieber as your walk-up song. I mean, come on now.
No, football coaches in Texas are probably not
so
doing that.
What are you
that?
Doing playing a sad Justin Bieber song behind them?
That's tough, man.
No, I mean, I know you're a Biebs guy, kind of.
That's
aren't
a
you?
Jam. I was kind of singing to it as we were going through.
That wouldn't be your walk-up song. Does, that's like a sad one, man.
Who doesn't? Like the Despacito remix with JB.
Yeah, well, I can't understand him half the time, even though I took Spanish for 4 years.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You just vibe with it. Yeah, that's a bad look for him, man. Whoever did that to him, trying to sabotage Cliff.
Yeah, and then Mitch alluded to this earlier, and a reporter, I think he'll say where he's from here if I remember right, but I've named him Old Man River on the audio clip because that's what he kind of looks like and remind me of, and just watching him on this video. Here is an old man down on the river asking a question to Cliff Kingsbury.
You're a fine coach. It's a great conference, great school, all-world offense.
Picture a guy who hasn't slept in a while asking questions.
I figure there may be 5,000 seniors who start on defense in Texas a year. You recruit from other states. Why can't you get 10, 15, or 20 who can hold your opponents to 30 points or less a game?
Shoulder shrug.
I wish I had the answer.
Man.
Yikes. That's brutal,
man.
Like, now, and it's crazy because this isn't, he didn't say, that was as respectfully as you could have asked that question, right?
Right.
Like, that was a really nice, calm way to ask that brutal question. And I also, like I said before, I give, you know, Cliff a little bit of a tip of the cap for not going off. Man, can you imagine if some of these other coaches out there, if they had been asked this, like, if this go right to Saban. Like, if that was Nick Saban that was asked that, or if that was Urban Meyer. The McElwain at Florida, like all sorts of these guys, right? Would not have handled that quite as well.
Man.
So props to him for doing that. But the question is kind of valid, though. Is it not? Like, that's also part of why I think that it doesn't seem so bad. It's because it's kind of something we've all wondered about Texas Tech for a long time. Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, yeah. And if you want to go check out the video, it's great. Just picture an old frazzled man just like asking this question. He ends it with a shoulder shrug like, well, what are you going to do? But yeah, I mean, they do need to hold opponents to at least 30. I mean, shoot, man. If you can hold them to 35 in the Big 12, it seems like you're doing something right with the high-paced offense there. But, yeah, I mean, man, there's a ton of guys in the state of Texas, Cliff. Why can't you get some who can stop a nosebleed or something?
Like, why can't you get
any? And I think now that I think about that, I think that guy was from, like, the Orlando Sentinel.
Really?
He
must have excellent job security, though. He's got awesome. Well, you know, expansion. He could be getting prepped for the future because at some point, like UCF or somebody would be in the Big 12.
That's right.
And he would need to know the lay of the land before he gets there.
And that wasn't the end of the hard-hitting, hard news journalism questions for Cliff Kingsbury.
Cliff, can you just talk about your relationship with Lincoln Riley, and are you worried at all that he may replace you as the most attractive coach in the Big 12?
I am. He's a great-looking guy. I would actually like him to take that title. He can make some shirts about it, and he can run with it. And we can just talk about football.
So I'm going to ask you about your relationship, but really I'm just concerned. Are you worried about losing the title of hottest coach in college?
That's so bizarre. That might be. So we should really compile a list of most bizarre media day questions during talking season, because we're full on into talking season. We'll have Big Ten media days next week. That's going to be up there, right? That's going to be way up there for most bizarre questions that we get this entire offseason.
By the way, I think he still got the title. Because I think Cliff, he looks like Ryan Gosling. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah. He does look like him.
Yeah, he does.
I wonder, though, like, this would be so much better for him if they won a lot. You know what I mean? Like, it would be something that I think that he'd be a whole lot more likely to want to answer questions about, though it's still odd for you to be asking the coach how hot he is and different variations of that. It's weird. But he would be much better feeling about it if they were winning 10 games a season and this was going on versus coming off of a season like last year.
So let's get back to the Big 12 overall. I asked Mitch Sherman, and I knew he said that. I just forgot it, that he's kind of on the Oklahoma State bandwagon, and I kind of am too, for possibly winning the Big 12 conference. I think if there's ever a chance that Oklahoma could maybe slip, and maybe this Bob Stoops thing to Lincoln Riley could be it. Like, I feel like this is a chance for Gundy to finally do it. Although I think he's only beaten Oklahoma three times since he's been at Oklahoma State. So would your money still be on the Sooners, or would you say this is the year maybe the Cowboys poke through?
Very nice. I see what you did there. I was on Oklahoma State last year as well.
Like, okay.
I was with them last year.
They were close.
I think it's their time again this year. So I'm going to stick with them on this one, because I do think the whole thing with Oklahoma, it has to take a little bit of a step back. And the real test of that will be once they face a little bit of adversity. You don't have that steady hand at the helm anymore. And Bob Stoops, you've gone to one of the youngest football coaches in America and Lincoln Riley. Like, I think that they will take a little bit of a step back, though. If you look at their recruiting, for example, like, they are still humming along. Like, the guys are very excited there. Seems like their players are bought in and sticking around and all of that. Mm-hmm. It was just a fine transition. But it'll be interesting to see how it translates on the field once they hit that first real adversity. And they've got a tough game early in the season, having to go to the Shoe, having to go up to Columbus and play Ohio State.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's going to be a tough one. And Phil Steele, obviously, I mean, that guy does more studying than anybody in the world, it seems like, when it comes to college football. And he has Oklahoma ranked as the number one overall offense and defense, and second in special teams.
Wow.
So
amazing to me.
Yeah, which is interesting with the defensive side, but maybe it's, you know, takes into factors because how much the Big 12 can score, possibly. But I found that really interesting.
Wow, I'm surprised by that, because I've got my Phil Steele magazine. I've gone through past the Big 10 and kind of looking at what was going on there. But, man, that is surprising. I could see that offensively, because Baker Mayfield is a monster. He's going to put up a lot of numbers out there. And they always have skill position players. But they lost some guys off of that defense, and they're just going to give up points because they're in the Big 12.
Free 6 months online subscription. We're going to do that next segment. Also, we have a White Sox fan amidst us. I've heard a lot of Cub talk about the Jose Quintana trade. I want the reaction of a White Sox fan. That is Greg Smith. We'll get that from him next. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back to Hail Varsity Radio. TJ Henning alongside Greg Smith of Hail Varsity in with me today. Just been doing some Big 12 Media Days talk. We had Mitch Sherman on earlier from ESPN.com and did some Cliff Kingsbury audio. Got some Laker talking with Greg here. I know he enjoyed that.
Yes, I did.
To wind things up here in this final segment of Hour 1, we got Jacob Padilla. Of HailVarsity.com as well coming up in Hour 2. We're going to talk some basketball with him. Man, this is such a great song. apologize.
It's you gotta been a good day, ride, right? Man.
You gotta let it ride.
It's a great song.
I was teasing earlier, Greg, White Sox guy, I'm a Royals guy, so some AL Central guys in here right now. But we had the Cubs and White Sox trade. Jose Quintana, the big name from that trade. You had the Cubs giving up Eloy Jimenez, Dylan Cease, Matt Rose, and Brian Fleet. Apparently Jimenez is a top 10 prospect and Cease is a top 100 prospect, so quite the haul. I heard a lot of Cubs fans kind of at first not necessarily love this, although I think it turned out to be pretty good for them because they get Jose locked up till 2020.
Yeah, he's on a great deal.
And they needed some starting pitching help. But you as a White Sox guy, do you mind giving up that talent to start a rebuild or continue the rebuild is maybe what I should say.
I'm perfectly fine with it. I was very happy with what they got. The White Sox now have 9 of the top 68 prospects in baseball.
Woo.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
and not only is it, it's a great thing to rebuild your team like that, and they've got other guys that are in the majors right now that are young and locked up for quite some time as well. They're still probably going to deal Frazier as well, so they'll end up having some more prospects even coming through here. But no, I'm perfectly fine with what they did here. I think that they're in really good position. And on a side note, like, I can never remember a time where the White Sox cared so much about building up their farm system. Like, they have traditionally not been a team that has been about that. They have always gone after kind of the big fish at what seems like the tail end of their career. Like, no one remembers Ken Griffey Jr. playing for the White Sox. I do, because he was there over the hill. And there's just been a run of those types of guys. They need to build this thing from the ground up and build it with some young guys. The only thing I don't like about this is all the Cubs fans around here keep referring to this as the White Sox doing the Theo plan. I'm not thrilled with that.
Okay.
But outside of that, no, I'm very happy with what they're doing.
No, I went and saw Griffey when he was down at the K at the Royal Stadium, one of his final years down there with the White Sox. I can't remember how many years he was with the White Sox. Do you remember?
I think it was just one.
Was it just one? Okay.
It was just one season because I didn't get my jersey and I was mad about it.
So yeah, I happened to catch him there. So obviously seeing a baseball legend, that was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, this was a win-win for both teams. Like I mentioned, you get Jose locked up till 2020. He's a good starting pitcher. And you continue the rebuild for the White Sox. I mean, that's some really good talent that they hauled in right there.
Yeah, they have. I think in probably, 2019, 2020, the Sox are going to be real good.
All right, that's fine.
They'll be back like the Lakers. they'll be back, but it'll be another couple of years.
2017? All right, that's not too long.
Doesn't it feel like that sounds like a super long time away if I say 2019, 2020, and then you realize, wait a second. it's two, 3 years away.
It's got to be like those Philadelphia people and trust the process. That's what you got to do sometimes.
Yeah, their process is broken, though.
That's right. We'll see. They got to stay healthy. Okay, if you want a six-month free online subscription to HailVarsity.com, get the best updates from a guy like Greg Smith or Jacob Adia, who we have coming up. Be caller 4 or caller 5 right now, 466-3776. I will take two winners, maybe more if I'm feeling generous. 466-3776, six-month online subscription, yours. Jacob Adia next, HailVarsity.com. This is the Hail Varsity Radio presented by Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz and TJ Henning.
Welcome back into Hour 2 of Hail Varsity Radio. TJ Henning alongside Greg Smith, HailVarsity.com, sitting in with me today. We're now going to Tap the Line, brought to you by Shillingbridge Cork and Tap House. We're going to talk to Jacob Adia of HailVarsity.com. We're going to talk all things basketball. Don't forget, though, to check out ShillingbridgeCorkandTap.com or their Facebook page. Jacob, my man, how are we doing?
Well, I just got done getting shots up.
Oh, how's the form looking?
Mine's pretty good, I think. Not as good as my brother's, but I taught him everything he knows, so I'm taking credit for how he does.
Okay, does it look better than Lonzo Ball's form?
Come on, man.
Yes.
Wait a second. It goes in, guys.
No, I'm with you. It's not pretty, man.
man. So, that's where we're going to start. We're going to start off there.
Yeah, a little light there. Glad to have Jacob here with us. Jacob, let's get right into things. This Nebraska ball offseason, a lot's been written about that there's kind of a different feel. You know, things are happening in the locker room and in the weight room. Have you been around the team at all this offseason? Have you got that sense?
Not really. I haven't been able to get down there much. Okay. Haven't been around the team. But one thing to be careful with is that that's kind of a common off-season theme.
Mm-hmm.
The chemistry is great. Everything's going well. And especially, I think, kind of the change is when Nebraska got the Thomas Allen commitment, and then you added the Dubio KK pickup to that. It kind of totally changed the feeling of the off-season, because before that, you had everybody transferring out. You weren't picking up anybody else. It's just everybody looking like they were fleeing the program. And then now you get a four-star, top 150 recruit type kid to say, hey, this is where I'm going. I'm going to do something here. That totally changed, I think, the mindset of both the fan base and, I think, just within the program, too. I think they're feeling a little bit better about it, and now you kind of carry that momentum into your off-season workouts. Haven't heard anything negative about those, for sure.
Okay. I want to get your thoughts on this, because I'm not sure if I've got them yet. The I-course, the whole, our goal is to make the tournament NCAA every year for the basketball team, which I still find crazy because you've only made it seven times in your whole history. What are your thoughts on that being the goal every year? And let's say Tim Miles has a winning record or has a winning record and makes the NIT. Like, is he still around in your opinion?
Yeah, I think that's kind of a tough one just in terms of laying out your goals there. Like, you don't want to have your AD as a Power 5 I'm a Creighton fan, so I got to include the Big East there. But as a high-major team, you don't want to have your AD come out and say, oh, our goal is to make the tournament every once every 2 years, once every 3 years. Like, that's not something you necessarily want to hear. So I think everybody, you ask them, hey, our goal is to make the tournament. Top of the country all the way down to the bottom, mid-majors, everybody, their goal is to make the tournament. So I think that's something that you kind of have to say. But at the same time, that is, again, Nebraska is the Big Ten team. You'd like them to be, you'd think they'd be able to have some success. So this year, the tough part is everything's so different. You lost your top player from last year. You had a lot of guys that you were kind of building around transfer out. So this year, it's just a complete unknown. You've got a lot of talent on the team compared to in years past, but will they be able to actually turn that talent into production and win? Because a lot of these four-star guys haven't really proven anything. They've got a lot of them on the roster now, but they haven't played that well or played at all at the college level, especially in Nebraska. So this year, I'm not quite sure how to look at this year because it's so up in the air, but you definitely can't have a repeat of last year, I don't think. Miles, I think, is definitely going to feel some heat if you see them go on long losing streak, or if they finish well under 500 again like they did last year.
And so, you know, Jacob, going off of a couple of questions so far, is that, you know, with the off season, hey, the morale is good, workouts are going well, and then going into the, hey, you know, we want to make the tournament every year talk, like, is there a point in the off season where you would even be able to say, hey, I feel either good or bad about the team's chances? Or are they in a situation kind of like the football team is in right now, where we got to wait until the games start and you kind of have to show me before you start feeling good one way or the other?
I think that's 100% right, and that's a really good comparison between the football and basketball team. And it's just because there's so much unknowns, like I was saying. You've got James Palmer, transferred from Miami. He was a four-star guard coming out of high school, but didn't do a whole lot at Miami. What is he going to give you? Isaac Copeland, A, when is he going to be eligible? And B, what is he going to give you? Is he going to be healthy? He's been a really good player at times. He was a five-star coming out of high school. But he also got banged up and really struggled, and that's why he left Georgetown. So you've got so many of these guys. You've got the freshman coming in. What is Isaiah Roby going to give you in year two? Because he didn't really get a whole lot out of him last year. So you've got Glenn Watson as kind of the guy you're building around it. You know sort of what you're going to get. But even him, he hasn't shown that he's a number one guy, and he's going to have to be that this year. Last year, Ty Webster was obviously that guy, and then Glenn kind of had these spurts where he was looking like the best player on their court, and there were other times where he just kind of disappeared for a game or two, and he's not going to be able to do that. He's got to be consistent. So this is definitely you can talk all you want about the offseason. I mean, obviously, I think a lot of fans have seen the pictures of Isaiah Roby going around and how much work he's put in the weight room, and that's all good for now, but I don't think it's going to mean anything until they get out on the court and start playing some real teams.
Yeah, hashtag offseason muscle watch. That's a good one there. I think you can thank Lang Whitaker on Twitter for that one. Hey, want to move up to the team in Omaha that you keep a close eye on, the team that wears white and blue, Creighton. Now, I don't keep tabs too much on Creighton, but is this a team that's going to be ranked preseason top 25 in your eyes?
They're probably not going to be top 25. I think they'll kind of be a fringe team there just because of what they lost from last year and kind of the two faces of the program outside of Marcus Foster and Maurice Watson and the start he got him off to, and then Justin Patton, your top 20 first-round draft pick. So you've lost those two guys, and you've got a lot of question marks on the interior. But I think they'll be a fringe team, and if they'll have some chances in non-conference. I just saw they're playing UCLA in that holiday tournament they're in down in Kansas City. So that'll be a good test for them. So games like that, I think they'll have a chance to prove themselves. Their backcourt, I think, is going to be one of the best around with Khyree Thomas and Marcus Foster. Khyree Thomas is just an absolute monster. I don't know if you've been paying attention.
Yeah,
we've got this
can
college
you say
pro
a stat,
summer league.
Did he have a crazy stat line the other night that I see you tweet out?
Well, it's not every night. It's not the other night. It's every night. he's averaging 51 points over his last four or five summer league games. And obviously, it's summer league. It's not structured competitive. But a lot of these guys are former college players. Some of them played professionally. And anytime you've got the D1 guys out there, everybody out there is taking it to them. They're challenging those guys, trying to prove themselves. So it's not like he's getting uncontested layups. These are pull-up jumpers. These are breaking the guy down and going and finishing strong, and he is just playing with so much confidence right now. And I don't think you're going to be able to find a better two-way player in the Big East this year.
Wow. Jacob Badia with us, HailVarsity.com. He writes a lot about basketball for HailVarsity.com. Now, Jacob, you also do a lot of coaching with in-state kids. I want to get your opinion and just maybe throw out some names for me. Who are some kids in Nebraska people should be looking out for in the basketball circuit? And maybe specifically, I've heard a lot of things about this kid out of Platteview.
Yeah, Platteview kid is Brady Hyman. He's a 6'11 center. Really thin, but he can run the floor. He's got great shot-blocking instinct. His offense is improving greatly over the last couple of years. And he's a guy that both Creighton and Nebraska are keeping a close eye on. Neither one has offered yet, but they've seen him several times. They're pretty much going to any games of his that they get a chance to. And they're giving him every opportunity to prove that he belongs at that level. And I don't know if he's going to get there, and even if he does, he'll be a serious project. But, I mean, anytime you've got 6'11", you've got to take that seriously. And he's got a pretty good game. So I think he's one that if you're going to want to keep your eye out for, especially Nebraska fans, I think I don't know if they're going to offer, but I think they're going to keep watching these last couple of weeks, and they'll let him know by mid-August or so whether they're going to extend an offer there. And then another one, name might be a little familiar to Nebraska fans, is Sharif Mitchell. His father, Alvin, played for the Huskers way back. And Sharif is probably the most improved player in the state just in terms of what he's done with OSA this year, joining the OSA Adidas team and playing on the Adidas gauntlet. He has just been an absolute monster for them, getting it done on both ends. He can put up a ton of points in a hurry, but defensively, he's probably the best on-ball defender in the state right now. And I don't think Nebraska is going to be involved there just because of his size. He's generously probably maybe 6 foot, so that's going to be tough for him. But I know he's got an offer from UNO. He just picked up one from LIU Brooklyn. I know Drake likes him a lot, Missouri Valley. So I think he's a kid that's going to start to get some more mid-major offers as these last two tournaments of the AAU season play out. And then the third guy that I want to mention is Cannon Coster. He's kind of a dual sport athlete out of Kearney, but he decided he's not going to play football. He's just going to focus on basketball at the next level. He's a quarterback too, so he's a pretty good football player. But he's getting a lot of Ivy League interest. He just picked up his first offer from Furman. He's got a lot of schools watching him, talking to him. He's been out on a lot of a lot of workouts and unofficial visits and things of that nature. So those are three guys certainly keep an eye on in terms of guys that could be getting offers over the next 2 weeks.
Hey, Jacob, shifting from guys making their way to college, from college to pro, how are the guys from Nebraska or some guys that you've kept your eye on looked in summer league so far?
Unfortunately, a lot of them didn't really get a whole lot of burn. Siobhan Shields, who was set to compete, ended up just re-signing with his team overseas, and he didn't even come over and compete with the Heat anymore. So that was a change. But Ty Webster did not play at all with Charlotte in the Orlando League, but got some burn with the Warriors. Didn't do a whole lot, but in the final game, their consolation game, they started him, I think. He got in there, scored 12 points, had a real big highlight block, I think a lot of people have probably seen on Twitter. Mm-hmm. So he got to show a little bit. I think he's probably one that you're going to be looking at probably heading back overseas. I'm sure in New Zealand, he's down there in that part of the world, he can probably get a pretty good contract, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him down that way. And then Teron Pettaway is the other Husker who was working out in summer league. He played with the Celtics. He got some playing time here and there, never a ton of minutes. Didn't have any huge games. Unfortunately, I think previously he had some big summer league, but this year he was just kind of more of a role player, got a few minutes here and there. So I don't necessarily know how much Toronto helped himself this summer.
Yeah, and then also former Husker Andrew White, he played for the Cleveland Cavaliers summer league team, and I remember one of his stat lines, he had 12 points, 4 made threes, but then also 6 fouls in 12 minutes. So okay. It hadn't seemed like many things had changed with Andrew White. Jacob,
he gets 10 in summer league, so.
Oh, that's right.
Might as well use him.
Yeah, that's right.
Use him up.
But still, 12 minutes. Now, you're a Suns guy. What did you see out of Josh Jackson this summer?
I think we saw a lot of what we were expecting to see. The dude is just a fierce competitor. He's just going at it 100% all the time. He had a huge game, like 20 points, like 15 rebounds, somewhere in that range, one of them. Showed some things offensively, some nice touch on some floaters and some creative shots. Still got to work on that jump shot, obviously. I think that's the biggest thing with him. But I liked a lot of what I saw, and I think I saw that he ended up on the All-Summer League team. So that was good for Sun. I'm excited about how he's going to fit on this team, especially next to Devin Booker.
And, you know, Jacob, how many out of just all of the guys now that you saw during Summer League, who stood out the most to you? What was the guy you saw and you're like, man, that guy I think is really going to translate in the league?
That's a tough one because I haven't been able to lately watch a lot of the Las Vegas games because of my schedule. You're excited about the Lakers guys. Ball kind of showed what he can do, but Kyle Kuzma, I think, was really impressive and really surprised a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But I think he played better in Vegas than he did all throughout his college career.
I would agree.
I think that's what a lot of people are surprised at. 30-10 in that championship game. Congrats on that, Greg. Lakers champions again.
Thank you. I told TJ that I celebrated with the coldest filtered water last night.
Yeah, you obviously got Magic out there declaring the Lakers are back, so obviously that's a thing now. So congrats on that. But the Lakers is doing pretty well. A lot of the guys that have been kind of – you always get the guys that come back for their second summer league and look like they don't belong. And there were a handful of those guys between the three summer leagues. I thought in terms of rookies, Donovan Mitchell for Utah is one. A lot of draft guys on Twitter were really high on going into the process, and I think he definitely lived up to what they expected from him. And they had him running point guard a little bit more in that league than he will for the Jazz. But he was impressed with just the different ways he found to score, the point totals he put up. He's a really good defender, too. So that's another guy that they had a really good summer league.
Yeah, my boy, Stevie Franchise Light, Dennis Smith Jr., played really well for the Dallas Mavericks out there as well. All right, Jacob Adil, HailVarsity.com. Thanks so much for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
Yep, talk to you guys later.
Yep, thanks, Jacob.
All right, got the basketball lowdown from Jacob Adil. That was good right there. Coming up next, we still got Lincoln Soul Dogs VIP tickets to give away for Saturday's game. So stick around for that. Going to talk a little NFL coming up. San Francisco's Giants sellout streak is over. Let's find out how many games that was. But coming up next, talk a little Husker football with Greg Smith. You're listening to Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back in. TJ Henning, Greg Smith with you today. Chris Schmidt up in Minnesota land watching the Yankees versus the Minnesota Twins. And let's just say he's getting it done. He's getting after it. He's having a few brews. And on this past Saturday morning show, I held it down with Mark Kranach. You know, we were joking. And boy, Kranach just... I mean, he was saying maybe, you know, Schmidt might be face down in a Great Wolf Lodge or face down on a Golden Corral buffet table.
That sounds about right. He made it back, though, for a little bit.
Yeah, he did. But, man, I actually really put that image into my mind, and I could not stop laughing.
Being face down at a Golden Corral buffet table. Yeah. Hey, man, sometimes that all-you-can-eat prime rib will get you.
I've never stepped in a Golden Corral. Don't ever plan to, but, you know, if you like it, good for you. But also, I just saw this on Twitter, dude, because we were talking about Last Chance U is, I think, coming on Netflix either this weekend or maybe Sunday, something like that.
Yep.
Star Wars Rogue One is on tonight on Netflix.
Nice.
How about that?
Have you seen it, right?
Oh, of course.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I'm going to have to watch that again. I think I might have told you this, might not have, is that when we saw that in the theaters, we were late getting our tickets. So we were sitting in the front row on the corner. And so you can see this. No one else can. My neck was like this, Craig to the side the whole time in 3D, by the way. So it was just, I need to watch it again. I'll check it out on Netflix.
So speaking of 3D, there was for a while where I was kind of obsessed, like every movie I had to go to was 3D. Mm-hmm. And I guess this is maybe like high school for me. Because I remember when they got like the really nice 3D glasses, like the ones I'm kind of rocking now, instead of like the blue and red ones.
Yeah,
that 3D stuff was awful. But then like when you saw Avatar for like the first time.
Yeah, Avatar
3D,
really kicked that
like,
up.
Like that was really sweet. But now I've kind of swung again where I'm like, I'm against going to these movies in 3D. Like I think they're just pretty good in the 2D, whatever.
Yeah, like whatever I don't know that. I can't remember. I think Rogue One might have been the last one that I saw in 3D because we try to avoid it now. Most often now, if we got the option, we go without 3D, just go regular. I thought about it for the new Spider-Man.
Which have you seen, by the way?
I have seen it. Yeah,
okay,
yeah. But we didn't do 3D. It's worth it. I thought it was pretty good. I did not love it as much as it seemed like a lot of people did. Okay. But it was a good movie.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I gotta check it out. Marvel, they do such a great job with that stuff. So I'm definitely gonna check that out. Okay. Before we get into the Lane of 10 article Aaron Sorensen put together, best worst case scenario for the Nebraska football team for this upcoming season, I want to go back to what we started in the first segment where we're talking attrition with this Husker football team. You know, we had Greg Smith, who did all this great reporting over this weekend about Elijah Blades and Damian Watts. You're going to be surprised if both those guys ever end up on campus. Would that be correct?
Yes, I would be stunned. I honestly at this point don't know which one I would consider more of a long shot, considering we think Watts at this point could be retired from football. And Elijah Blade seems to be like, it just, I don't have a better way to describe it other than saying that he seems kind of scorned by the situation and upset by what happened. Like, I feel like there had to have been a miscommunication between Elijah Blades and Nebraska's like coaching staff / compliance office, in which they someone convinced him that he was going to have a quote unquote easier path getting into Nebraska, and then it did not happen. But I mentioned this to you kind of off air, is that I feel like part of this, though, and I don't want to dump on the kid, but part of this is accepting personal responsibility for the situation that you're in as well. Because if you only read his quotes right now that have been coming out, and you only go by, you know, the things that I've been told and I've reported, like, it does make it sound like he feels that this is all happening to him. Like, he's not an active participant in his own future, right? That's what it kind of feels like if you just read that stuff. And I think that absence of taking responsibility and that lack of accountability in the situation from afar is not a good sign. Like, you can't have that going into what's going to be a much tougher situation to come out of the other end good in and going to JUCO and having to do it now for 2 years. That is going to be a very, very hard thing. And I'm wishing him all the best, but that's that's going to be a very difficult process for him to come out of on the other side and get it back to where he wants to be, where he's playing major D1 football and potentially going off to the NFL.
Yeah, and off air in between segments, you brought up a great example. And we had his head football coach on, and he told us he really needed to get after Jalen Bradley out of Bellevue West. That was a guy who looked like he might not be able to get here academically, but he worked hard and got here.
Yeah, and then that's an example of, you know, when and then there's been a lot of fans that have said this over the last couple of days, and I've seen it on Twitter, I've seen it in our comments on our message board, all of that, is that, you know, why did Nebraska waste their time with a guy who they knew during this past season when they were recruiting him that he could be an academic risk? Well, the reason, there's two reasons. One, especially in a case like Elijah Blades, 6'3", 170-pound, four-star cornerback, you don't just find those walking around every day, right? So you're going to do everything that you can in the university. They did everything that they could. When you start talking about partial qualifiers, you're really doing everything that you can to try to get a guy into your school. But that type of talent level dictates that. You definitely try that. But then the other thing is that you don't often see that play out. You usually have it where if a guy early on is identified as having academic issues, maybe he needed to clean some things up from earlier in his high school days, or he knew that he had to get a really good test score, guys typically do what Jalen Bradley did, which is buckle down, really lock into their work and get it done. Remember when Jalen Bradley got his offer finally from Nebraska, because it was later in the process, and then when he committed, he talked about how, you know, it was a reward for all of the hard work that he put in. It was his dream to come to Nebraska to play Division I college football. He was told that he needed to get his classwork in order. He did that and buckled down. Usually that's the type of situation that you're in. You're not in a situation where the guy didn't, but though it does happen, but I would say 60% of the time it feels like it goes the other way, where the guy gets that information early and then works really hard to get it figured out, just didn't work out this way in not only one case, but two cases for Nebraska. And it felt like, and I think that from what I was told, Deontay Watts and Elijah Blades were in similar situations with the test scores that they needed and all of that, just didn't work out for them.
So the other part of this is, now that you have two more scholarships, you know, this class seemed like it was going to be around maybe 15, 16. Mm-hmm. Now it looks like it has potential to be 17, 18. And you wrote about this in your article, and everybody should go check it out, HailVarsity.com. Greg, in your mind, do you think they'll plan to use both scholarships for this 2018 class, or maybe just one? What do you think?
It will. This is the cop-out answer, but it depends, because it's a complicated situation in that it depends mostly on what type of caliber player they're going to get to fill that spot, right? So we knew that Nebraska has been in on this recruiting cycle and on a lot of very high-end players, good four-star players that they've been in on across the board, right? So if they can continue to find that level of talent that want to take those scholarships, then I think that they go ahead and use both of them for this year. Otherwise, I would not be surprised if they maybe use one of the additional ones this year and then maybe save one for 2019, because the 2019 class is not going to necessarily be able to be a huge class either. But I would see if they're going to utilize those scholarships, and now that they have two additional ones that could be in play for this cycle, we could end up seeing a situation where a position that we thought maybe was a little bit closed off for this cycle, quarterback, running back, maybe those are spots that you end up opening back up to, and maybe Nebraska goes out and offers a kid at one of those positions outside of, you know, everybody's talked about TJ Pledger at the running back, which is a take no matter what if he wants to flip from Oklahoma. But that could open up the door for that type of situation. But I also think that they would be looking for more defensive end / outside linebackers if they can as well.
And one of those guys would be Micah Parsons. And you brought up TJ Pledger too. Like, in my mind, those are like the two ideal guys.
Yeah,
like,
those are the two guys everybody wants. Like, I see you lighting up in there.
Yeah.
Those are the two guys that just jump off the page at you. And to be honest, like, those two guys, TJ Pledger and Micah Parsons, those guys are takes no matter what. Like, they would have found a way to do that even if they didn't have these two additional scholarships.
Yeah.
And those two guys wanted to come to Nebraska, they were going to find a way. So they even get to be in their own separate little category on this. This is more looking at guys, whether or not, you know, Daniel Carson is a guy, a defensive end out of Missouri, that people think is a strong Nebraska lean, but maybe now they're able to get after an outside linebacker like a Ronnie Perkins, someone like that, or Raymond Scott, who's currently a USC commit, who was here for that June 23rd Friday Night Lights camp, surprisingly. They maybe have room for a guy like that now in this class.
Well, and then I also asked Schmidt yesterday, and we had him on a week or two ago when he committed to Wisconsin, but I didn't know if maybe this would open the door for Bryson Williams at a Lincoln East, you know, I mean, a Lincoln South East, excuse me, and he's a really talented guy. I was very impressed with the way he talked with us, just a real smart young guy. But, I mean, obviously it kind of seemed like it's a numbers game, maybe because you already have Masri Maipiu and Damon Daniels so it's just not there for him. But man, somebody that talented is right in your backyard. It seems like now you got two scholarships. Like, would you chance by like knocking on that door again?
I don't think they're knocking on that door. I think
like
that, yeah, I think that that one's closed. I don't think that Nebraska feels that they need another nose tackle type of player. And I think that if you kind of look at the numbers, while there's, and this will wildly swing the perception of this as to what happens during the season, right? Mm-hmm. So if we get to the season, and Mick Stoltenberg looks really good because he's scheduled to, he'll return for next season. If the Davis twin gets in there and he rotates in and plays well, if Damian Daniels rotates in and plays well, then all of a sudden you've got guys, all three of them, which are coming back for next season anyway, so you don't feel the pinch there, right? Mm-hmm. But if those guys go out there and struggle, people will bring Williams back up and say, why didn't they go ahead and offer him?
Okay, and we're going to continue on with recruiting here. We might push that Sorensen article to the next segment, but I know since we got the recruiting guy in here, Greg Smith, I came across this. Now, Joshua Moore, who's one of the – was it a Bleacher Report video or was it just his own video that he made?
I think it was his own.
Okay. Well, anyway, I really liked his. I'm not a big video guy.
There was another one today, man, that I thought about you, and I should have sent it to you. There's a Penn State kid. It's at a pool party. He dives into the pool, and then the pool turns Penn State blue with their logo. He pops out of the water and says, "We are," and then everybody yells, "Penn State." It was sickening. Sorry, go ahead.
You kids are in high school. Be humble. Sit down. Kendrick Lamar, you all listen to it. Do it. And Searles is totally against videos, and we had this whole discussion about Ranch last night, which really blew up on Twitter. Like, I didn't realize so many people in Nebraska don't like Ranch or don't.
Yeah, that was
it,
a weird conversation.
We have to say that for later. What I want to get to is Joshua Moore. He's saying he's still open to suitors. Do Husker fans need to worry at all?
It's going to sound crazy. I do not think that Husker fans need to worry about this one. I think that he is going to continue to look, but this is what happens when you recruit the kid that has the most Power 5 offers of anyone in the nation, right?
Yeah.
Is that he's got so many options. Everybody wants him. He's got these different connections at different places. His twin brother at Texas A&M being a commit there. He's got his first cousin that's a transfer into LSU, and then you have schools like Alabama that are still after him. You're going to have to continue to recruit this kid and recruit him hard. And also, mom is very important in this because he said multiple times that part of the reason why he committed to Nebraska was that his mom wasn't able to make it to LSU with him on a visit. So that played a factor in it. Continue to recruit mom, get him back here for an official visit. They'll be fine. I think he's going to be here, in my opinion, right now. Okay. he's still in.
Yeah, now you got Coach Ed Orgeron running without a shirt on, and maybe, you know,
I don't quite get the appeal. I feel like they're going to take a step back as well. Edo, he's a great assistant, not a head man.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I love me some Raging Cajun, man. Love me some of that voice. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by Nebraska Lottery. We'll be right back.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Welcome back into Hail Varsity Radio. Sartor Hamann is Nebraska's exclusive dealer of pure-grown diamonds. Pure-grown diamonds are 100% real diamonds, except they are grown in a lab instead of mined from the earth. Pure-grown diamonds have all the characteristics of earth-mined diamonds, and many of our customers think they are much more beautiful. They are eco-friendly and 100% sustainable, all for 10 to 40% less than traditional earth-mined diamonds. Come in and see why pure-grown diamonds have become one of the biggest sellers in Sartor Hamann's history. You have to see them to believe it. SartorHamann.com. They have locations in Lincoln and Grand Island. Now, before we get into Land of 10, best case, worst case scenario that Aaron Sorensen put out. Now, we brought this up briefly in that last segment. Jeremiah Searles will absolutely devastate his pizza with ranch. just drowns in it. And, you know, I don't mind a little ranch with my pizza. That's fine. I usually just don't. But if somebody offers it to me, then yeah. Or like Papa John's with the garlic butter.
Oh, that sounds great.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I'll dip my crust in that all day.
Yep.
But like Brandon Vogel last night, he started this all off. He's like, yeah, I don't really eat ranch. And I was like, okay. And then we had more people saying like, yo, yeah, ranch is really overrated. Like Aaron Babcock
said he has not had it since college.
I mean, what?
Like, that's crazy.
Have these
to
people
me.
Not been to Amigos and had to need to dip their Mexi fries in ranch? Like,
I should have asked him about that at the office today. I totally forgot.
Like, come on, Amigos is a Nebraska staple. Like, when I discovered how good potatoes tasted with ranch, like, I couldn't stop now. So, like, I just, like, and I think Brandon Vogel said, like, you know, he didn't grow up on us. I'm like, did you grow up on Dorothy Lynch? Because that's, like, the thing in Nebraska. And he's like, yeah, not really. So, I don't know. I was just, I felt like ranch is a pretty, like, well-liked condiment, but maybe not.
It does feel like we had to kind of take do the defense of ranch last night, because there were a lot of people coming out of the woodwork saying they didn't like ranch. And it's weird, because I did not grow up eating a lot of ranch. I didn't have, like, I didn't eat ranch with pizza, because I'm from Chicago. We had just deep dish pizza. Mm-hmm. You don't really put ranch with that. When I came here to Nebraska, though, go to Valentino's and you get a slice of hamburger pizza, that goes great with ranch. Mm-hmm. If you go to Lazari's and you get the spicy chicken, that goes great with ranch. So there's just different ways.
Ross.
Yeah, or that too. That goes great with
the Randy Ross.
So, yeah, the Randy Ross, which was on $2 off yesterday. So, yeah, like, I get it. Like, and I think, I don't know if I would go all the way that Searles has with, you know, drowning it. Yeah. I don't know if we want to go that far. But no, ranch is tasty. Who doesn't like ranch?
No, and I used to think, like, the underrated condiment of all time is honey mustard. I love me some honey mustard.
I can't stand honey mustard.
Oh, and I used to be totally against mustard, but I've kind of come around to mustard a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not good with mustard either. Like neither.
Man, no, okay.
Neither version.
But let's be honest. Like, and I know he's doing the morning show with Nick, the cayenne ranch from Slim Chickens. I go crazy over that.
Yeah, stuff. That's great.
Oh, my goodness. I had this past Sunday. That's
the
stuff.
Cayenne ranch. Shout out to Bill. Cayenne ranch is delicious.
That stuff
is
money. Okay, Land of 10. Put out best worst case scenario here. They went through a whole bunch of different topics. You know, best case, Nebraska defeats Oregon. Worst case, Nebraska loses to Oregon. Mm-hmm. Best case, the offensive line stays healthy and is great. Worst case, they're bad. Same with Tanner Lee. Same with the defense. They could be great, could be bad. But I want to get to the crux of it and where they talk about the potential record. Best case for Nebraska, 10-2 or better. And then their worst case is Nebraska ends 6-6 or worse. I'm in the camp where I think 6-6 is the worst case scenario. I think with this schedule, if you don't start off 4-1, we got issues. Like, at least to me, in my mind, you should either be 5-0 or 4-1, and that one loss being Oregon. In my mind, if you go like 3-2. That is not a good telltale sign for me for the season.
No, because once you get to the back half of that schedule and you're facing tougher teams, especially when you get into that Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State, I think Minnesota is in there and Iowa as well to end your season. If you start off 3-2, it does not give you a lot of confidence mm-hmm. coming through that back end in a good manner to set yourself up to be able to go to Indy to face the Big Ten East champion in the championship game. I think they have to me, like, it sounds weird based on all of the unknowns and some of the things that, especially that Chris Jones injury is devastating, but I feel like to start the season 5-6-0 is reasonable. Like, mm-hmm. I am not, and maybe we've gone now too far the other way where I'm just completely unafraid of Oregon, but I think, save for Royce Freeman going completely nuts, like, I just don't think that Oregon should beat Nebraska. That is not a better Nebraska, or Oregon is not a better football team than mm-hmm. Nebraska right now. They're in more transition than Nebraska is, with a first year head coach, a first year staff out there. They had a bad season last year. They just got rid of their best wide receiver. Their quarterback position is in flux. Like, Royce Freeman is the thing that they have. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a really good thing to have, right?
No, for sure.
He destroyed Nebraska before he came out with that injury last year, and he is one of the best backs on all of college football. But I just feel like Nebraska should beat them and should be able to start their season off very well.
Yeah, I'm with you for the most part on Oregon. I think they still have a lot of questions. I mean, what? Man, they went 4-8, is that right, last year? Like, or was it 3-9?
It was 4-8.
Okay, I think it was 4-8 as well. But I really like Willie Taggart. I think he's kind of changing the culture there. I mean, you got guys passing out more in the off-season drills mm-hmm. because they're working out so much tougher. And yeah, then Darren Carrington, their talented wide receiver, can't avoid poles in McDonald's parking lot, so he's getting kicked off.
Which could not have possibly been his first offense, right? That had to have been something where not that that wasn't bad, and it is, mm-hmm. but I think that you've seen this all over the place. Teams make mm-hmm. every excuse and give as much latitude as possible to star players. Mm-hmm. It feels like there had to have been other things going on there, or other strikes that happened that were not publicized necessarily, mm-hmm. And that's what led to Taggart having to get rid of him, because you don't get a guy that turned down going pro early to come back like that. You don't just kick him off without that being, you know, a third or so offense.
So that's the worst case, 6-6. I agree. And I actually agree with Aaron's 10-2 as the best case, although she does says or better. Because to me, if you have only two losses, I don't see you beaten. Although you and I were talking about Penn State before the show, Wisconsin, Ohio State, Penn State. If you couldn't win at least one out of those three, I think you can get to 10-2. But I don't see you winning two out of those three right now in my mind.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard for me to see that, particularly because that Penn State game is on the road. If that Penn State game was here, I'd feel a lot differently about that. Of the three. I would most want to win the Wisconsin game because that has the most division implications. Like, it feels like Nebraska's always in some weird situation here the last handful of years at the end of the season where they're hoping for weird tiebreakers and all this stuff. I want them to go out and take care of business and, and control their own destiny in that situation. And then they need to be able to keep it close against Ohio State. Like, at this point, like, without seeing how the season is going, like, I think that it would be huge for them to not go out there and get embarrassed, which is, yes, Husker fans, not a great position for you to have to be in, but that's going to be something that we're kind of measuring with the team to make sure that they're getting a little bit closer to the Ohio States of the world, not necessarily to upset them, though crazier things have happened, especially with it being a whole game. Mm-hmm.
And you and I are both curious as how to Penn State's going to handle all this, you know, this pressure. Can they live up to the hype? Like, they're going to be, what are they? Well, the polls haven't come out, but a lot of people have them ahead of, like, Michigan in the division. Maybe even possibly winning that east side of the division. So how will they handle success? But, it's, yeah, you need to get over that Wisconsin hump, and that's what's really holding you back right now. And obviously, that's the win you probably most want in your schedule right now. Like, obviously, I think you'd want to take Ohio State just because they're the top dog, but I think just the way those last two Wisconsin games have gone, you really want to take down those Badgers.
It's a little revenge against the Badgers, right? Like, you want to be able to get them, beat you by a last-second field goal, beat you in overtime in back-to-back years. You want to be able to get some revenge on them and take control of this division.
All right, Salt Dogs VIP tickets. We're giving away those next in our final segment. Stick around.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Winding things down here, Hale Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. My thanks to Greg Smith for filling in for me, or not filling in for me, filling in with me today for Chris Schmidt. Appreciate it, man.
Not a problem.
Glad to have him here. We had Mitch Sherman on in the first hour from the Big 12 Media Days. We had Jacob Bedion of HaleVarsity.com talking a lot of hoops with him. So something that is sacred to Husker fans is the sellout streak. So sacred that I can't even remember what the number's at right now. Do you, Greg? He's looking around. It's 300-something.
Oh, man. They're going to get me for that 351. I don't know. Don't make me lie.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's a lot.
It's a lot. It ain't dead yet. It's dead for somebody else, though. The San Francisco Giants, they had a sellout streak of 530 games down there in the Bay. That started back in 2010. Now, I don't want to say this is, like, again, because it's sacred, like, more impressive. But, man, like, that's 81 home games a year. Yeah. That's for nearly 7 years. Like, and they have continuous games every day. To me, that is so impressive.
That's insane.
530 games, Major League Baseball?
Like, how, like, do you know it? Like, just putting you on the spot because we can talk about this. Do you know how that compares to other teams in Major League Baseball? Because I can't imagine that many MLB teams get anywhere close to that, right?
No,
like, even if you think about, like, kind of the first team that came to mind was the Cubs because the Cubs always have people there. But, like, I feel like you would have heard about that.
Yeah, right.
If the Cubs had that sort of streak going, too. Like, that's an impressive streak.
It really is.
And that's how many games.
That's a good question, too, because, like, the lovable losers, the Cubs, like, they were always there, but were they actually sold out? Because, I mean, everybody says how great of fans they are, which they are great, but, I mean, I don't know, man. I mean, it's 530 games. That is remarkable. So salute to you. Sorry the streak's over. I mean, the team's not really doing well this year in San Fran, so I get that. But, man, 530 games.
Is it an odd year? Is this the year they usually win the World Series?
They win it on even.
Oh, it's even. Oh,
2010,
see, that's why.
2012, that's why. 2014. That's why. Because 2017.
That's why. They'll be back next year.
Greg, without any spoilers, how awesome was the season premiere of Game of Thrones? I have not got to it yet.
Oh, it was amazing. I will not spoil it, and I'll probably watch it again either like sometime between now and when that next one. Because usually they show the episode from the week before, right before they show the new one. Mm-hmm. So I almost always rewatch it when I do that because I just love that show so much. But it was great.
I heard the first 3 minutes, just something absolutely crazy happens. Can you confirm without saying?
I sources confirm that something crazy very much did happen at the beginning of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, in Ballers, that comes season three. That comes back in a week or two.
Yep.
And they're going to be in Las Vegas predominantly for that season, so I can't wait for that.
I got to finish off season two.
Oh, yeah.
I did not.
Man, you
I've got
that.
Like five episodes to watch.
And then I got
to
see that Defiant Ones documentary about Dr. Dre, Eminem. Like, I saw a snippet of like how they discovered Eminem, and that was just crazy. So obviously, those HBO documentaries are done so well. Well, we've been teasing it all show long. Might as well give the people what they want. Give them what they need. Hey, Jalen Rose, sorry. Copyright there, probably. Salt Dogs VIP tickets, they can be yours right now. Caller 4 at 466-3776. You're going to get VIP tickets for Salt Dogs game this Saturday. The game is at 6:45. VIP tickets are yours. 466-3776. Salt Dogs VIP. It is just me tomorrow. I have Adi Joseph of For the win in USA Today. I got Mike Babcock in with me tomorrow, our first segment. Shoe Art, Wilderness Ridge Golf. We're doing something with OJ since the OJ parole is happening on Thursday. Keep it tuned here. Thanks for listening.